This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all around the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. Unfortunately, my beautiful and talented co-host, Kerry Kasem, is not here, and she really should be here. She would love being here, because our first guest would love talking to her, but Kerry is on assignment, and the fact of the matter is she would love being on the show because she has devoted her life to her father, Casey Kasem, and the rights of children. She has ran across the country passing laws that help children have a better relationship with their father. And because it is Father's Day today, or actually this weekend, I'm getting ahead of myself. We are dealing with the laws of fatherhood today. That is our show on Gervie's Law. Yes, we often have the greatest attorneys in the country like F. Lee Bailey and Alan Dershowitz and Jerry Spence on our show. On Mother's Day, we had Gloria Allred and her daughter, Lisa Bloom. Today, we are taking a curve. We're throwing a curveball at you, because we are going to talk about, later on in the show, we're going to talk about a film that just came out called The Hero with Sam Elliott, and we have the director and the co-writer of the film on the show. But we want to start off talking about fatherhood. We want to talk about someone who has been very controversial over the last couple years with his son. His son is Lonzo Ball, the UCLA superstar, who will likely be drafted number two by the LA Lakers in the upcoming June 22nd draft. And LeVar Ball is the father of Lonzo Ball. LeVar, welcome to Gervie's Law. I bet you never thought you would be on a legal show.
Never thought I'd be on a legal show. Yeah, you're right.
Well, at least being on a legal show where you're not trying to defend yourself against libel, which is, of course, you're not defending yourself today. But let me ask you something, LeVar. If you were in a court of law and you had to defend your name as the father of the year, what arguments would you make to the judge to say you are the father of the year?
I am the father of the year. You can tell by the three beautiful sons I've raised.
Now, you have three wonderful basketball-playing sons. How did you know that you would be able to train these boys into being stars at Chino Hills High School and now with Lonzo, obviously, at UCLA?
How did I know?
Yeah.
When they came out the womb, for me picking my wife, I knew I was going to have three superb sons because I don't have girls.
You don't have girls? Well, I'll tell you something. I have a friend, a lawyer friend of mine, who was doing a deposition. The defense attorney was about 6 feet tall, and he went up to her and he said, "Listen, what's your vertical jump?" And she said, "Here, come outside and I'll show you." It was a marriage made in heaven. They have kids who are 6'6", 6'8", playing basketball. Is that how it was with you and Tina?
See, it's just that simple. Everybody making it look so hard that you got to pick your next mate, and everybody want to say spiritually, "Oh, we got a good soul, and you don't need no soul. You better see something that's real."
And you have had something that's real for many years with Tina,
yes.
And she has been your soulmate. Now, she recently had a stroke, and I hear she's doing much better. How are you balancing being father of the year with Lonzo, LaMelo, and LaGello when you have Tina that you're taking care of?
The last name is Ball, and I do it all.
The Ball does it all.
I take care of mine.
Now, you have been involved in controversy over the last few months. I mean, you've done interviews everywhere, not on a legal show, mind you. But, you know, when we talk about Stephen A. Smith, you got into it with him. Colin Cowherd, Catherine Leahy, of course, and Max Kellerman was supporting you. How do you deal with the media? Why are you getting into it when,
well,
you know?
I've been controversial all my life. It's just now you catch it on film and you catch it on tape and on microphones.
Now,
but it's okay. I understand who I am. That's why it doesn't bother me.
but it bothers others. So that becomes a question mark. Aren't you ever...
When it bothers others, they're not doing nothing for me, so it's okay. Well, everybody got their own opinion. So they can either think good of me or bad of me, but it doesn't stop me from doing what I'm doing. As long as it's good for me, I'm okay.
Now, your theory of parenting started way back when you talked about potty training of your boys. Tell us a little bit about your theory and why it worked for you.
Well, I think everybody parents in a different way. But as long as they're consistent with it and they believe in what they're doing, that's all that counts.
Yeah, do you...
And this is my ways might be a little stranger than other people's ways, but it's effective. And like I said, my boys turned out to be fine gentlemen.
Now, not only are they fine gentlemen, they're excellent basketball players. I had an experience when I was a kid. I played Little League Baseball. On my team was a kid named Brett Hull, who is now in the Hockey Hall of Fame. His father is Bobby Hull, who is also in the Hockey Hall of Fame. When we sat on the bench between innings, when Bobby Hull came to watch Brett play baseball, Brett turned to me and he said, I am so nervous. I don't even want to play. When my old man's in the crowd, I can't perform. I can't do what I want to do. Why isn't that the case with you and your boys?
Say that one more time.
I want to know how your boys do not feel the pressure when you are in the crowd and you are on the sidelines and they can perform regardless of how much stress you have. Lamar.
Well, listen. My boys always perform. They never get nervous of playing. I've always told them that there's no pressure playing sports.
But that isn't true.
Know, say again?
That's not true, is it? No pressure? You played
no
football?
There's no pressure in sports. That's what I've been telling them from day one.
Yeah.
And it's not, because there's a lot of other things going on in life where there's real pressure.
And have you...
So just getting better at doing what you're doing and have a passion for something that's playing. It's just like if you don't make or miss a shot, life goes on.
But when you say that Lonzo, for instance, is a better player than someone like Steph Curry or can take on anyone in the NBA, LeBron or whoever, don't you think that puts a little bit of pressure on the guy?
What kind of pressure does it put on him? You got to eventually play against him, and you don't want him to be like, well, you know what? Just because LeVar and the parents aren't talking, we're not going to go at Lonzo too hard. We're going to go easy on him. Man, I want everybody to get a best game to come at my son. And that's what basketball is, competition. If you don't want to compete like that, go play golf or tennis or something. Play some cards.
Do you think...
When you're playing this physical sports and stuff like this, you better be ready for people to come at you.
Where?
If you're worried about what I'm saying and you can't perform on that court, you're not ready. This ain't for you.
That's true.
You ain't built for this. It's that big ball of brain. You got to be built for this.
Yeah, that's true. But again, we're talking about reality. There are so many kids who have folded under the pressure. When you were a kid, you had, what, four brothers. Wasn't it competitive?
Right.
Weren't you trying to go at each other? Like, what was going on in your family?
We were going at each other. But whatever happens, whether good or bad, we still went to sleep and still got something to eat. I mean, it wasn't no big deal. You want to win. But like I said, it's basketball and sports. If you don't go to the movies, go watch a game. Go watch football. But after that game, it's not a big deal. Get over it. I'll tell you what some pressure is.
Yeah.
Some pressure is come on home and they say, yo, you got to leave here. I don't care where you go, but you got to get the heck up out of here. That's pressure where you got to find somewhere to go and you don't have no money or you don't have nothing to eat. Pressure playing a sport and seeing this guy's going to put some defense on you, you're going to miss a shot, man, come on. After that's all over, go to the movies. Go get you something to eat.
Where did you learn all this? Is this from your dad? Like, how did you find this key to raising kids?
The key to raising kids, man, my dad raised us in a great way, and I just took that and took it a step further.
When you say took it a step further, what do you mean by that? Are you talking about...
Well, I took it a step further as far as understanding what my boys wanted to do in life as a passion for something. My dad taught us how to be very skilled at playing sports and being strong. But he never really got behind us at such a young age to say, you know what, let me make these into athletic stars. His mindset was, hey, don't play on the team. Why don't you own the team? So education was a big thing for him. But not knowing that the passion wasn't for me owning the team. It was playing. I wanted to play.
And you played. You played football, basketball.
He didn't push me like that. You know, he didn't lead me like that, like I lead my sons. But you know what? If my dad didn't do what he did for me, I wouldn't have led my sons like this.
Now, if your dad would have been a little tougher on you, you think you would have been a star in the NFL or NBA?
It's not even about him being tougher. It's just about him saying, you know what? I'm going to put you guys on a basketball team at 6 years old instead of wait till the 10th grade to say, okay, it's okay to play sports now.
Now,
but check this out. Yeah. Let's say I'm a superstar and I'm making all this money.
Yeah.
You don't have these three boys like this because they're not hungry and I don't need them like this. Now I just give them money and buy them everything. So you can't go through this road to get these boys unless I already started on the road with my dad.
Now, you talk about money. You're looking to make it big with the Big Ballers brand. How do you go about putting this in? Now, again, this is a legal show. Do you have lawyers working for you? How are you raising the money? Because when you have a...
raising the money?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to know how I'm raising money. It's my money. I just know what to do with it. I had a job. My wife worked for 20-something years. We can put money and store it away for something.
But how do you put together products like shoes for $495?
You got to be super smart. And my intellect on this business thing is very high.
Have you been working on this for a long time? Because we're only hearing about Big Ballers brand for the last year or so. You must have been putting some time into this.
Yeah, you got to put time into it. But now it's time to surface. I put 20 years into it. Now the hunt is on.
And now when we talk about this, are you just thumbing your nose up at Nike, Reebok, Adidas?
I ain't thumbing my nose up at nobody. My nose stays straight so I can smell all the good food.
Well, you got to smell the good food.
You got to. But see, if I already got a plan, I'm just not worried about Nike and Adidas and all this. I'm worried about my own thing, which is this Big Baller brand. Like I said, my son's coming into the league with his own brand, something never been done before.
Are you going to get any help from China?
I got a nice team. I have a very nice team around me, a very nice team, family-oriented. But they know what they do, because guess what? Everybody stays in their lane.
Well, apparently you told Christine Leahy to stay in her lane. Was that a mistake?
I told her to stay in her lane. You know what the reference is to that?
Check it out.
If you're on the freeway and you're trying to enter from the carpool lane and you don't stay in your lane, it's going to be a wreck. I try to tell her, stay away. Stay out of my lane so we don't get no wreck. She want to come over there anyway. And that's how you get in that wreck. And that's what I meant by stay in your lane. Leave me alone. Let me drive. We'll both get to our destination fine if you stay in your lane. But once you start to weaving and getting over in other people's places, that's when you get a crash. And that's what it was, a crash.
It was a crash, and it had nothing to do with her being a woman and not really being able to ball with you?
Right, it had nothing to do with that. She tried to change and twist all these words and say that I don't have respect for women and all that. If she would have just left me alone, we would have been fine. I wasn't even talking to her. I wasn't even looking at her. I've heard the things that she said. And then don't try to get all nice and act like you didn't say anything now. It's just like one of the things she said when she said she would never wear Big Baller gear.
Right.
Like it's bad to wear that. So now you're taking a shot at my wife wears it, my mom wears it, my mother-in-law wears it. She didn't even check the fact that we do sell to women. She didn't do her homework. She just straight telling, oh, you need to sell to some women. She don't even have a business, so she can't give me any kind of, she can't tell me anything about a business, especially if she doesn't have one.
Do you think that maybe it was your personality that threw her off and she couldn't stay in her lane because she was just going at it with you?
She was just going at it. She did the wrong thing. That's all it was.
Now,
and if she would have stayed in her lane, everything would have been fine. We wouldn't even be going over this.
Are you at all?
That she wanted to keep pushing things. She just pushed the wrong guy. That's all. And it happens like that sometimes, but it's okay.
Are you at all concerned that someone may come after you legally, whether for libel, slander,
or anything? I'm not doing anything wrong. You can't come after me legally if I'm not doing anything wrong.
Well, you know what they say? Truth is a defense. So if you ever get charged with a libel or a slander charge against you, you say truth.
As long as they leave me alone, ain't no legal, libel, slander, whatever. Just leave me alone, I'll be fine. But if you come at me, guess what? I'm coming back. If you just be quiet and say, I got a good thing for everybody who don't want me coming at them. Whenever somebody asks for something about LeVar Ball, say NC.
That's
no comment.
No comment.
And then you'll be fine.
Well, you know
that's why, see me, because I'm coming.
And you're not going to turn around. You're going to go full speed ahead.
I go forward. I don't do no turn around. I ain't no dancer.
And what about with the Lakers? What happens, and it looks like Lonzo's going to get drafted by the Lakers. Let's just say he doesn't. What's the contingency plan?
The contingency plan is this. My preference was for my son to play for the Lakers. It's lined up for him to play for the Lakers. If he does not play for the Lakers, Lonzo's goal was to be an NBA player. So whoever team he plays for, he'll be fine. But we would prefer, and I think it's going to be lined up because I'm such a lucky guy.
Yes.
It's going to be the Lakers. I'm just lucky like that. And what people don't want to happen is I said this long ago, and they don't want me to be so right. They say, man, we can't look like we just folding to LeVar Ball, saying he's going to play for the Lakers just because he said so. Ain't no other father saying, hey, he's going to play for Milwaukee or this. Nah. I'm good like that. I planned it for him to play for the Lakers. How's that?
Well, you've also said that if you speak it into an existence, it will happen.
Yes.
And you.
Hey, that's what I said.
You said that.
Hey, I like the man. You up on your game.
Of course I'm up on my game. You know, I follow your theory. I go argue in front of the Court of Appeals. I argue in front of judges all the time. If I'm not up on my game, who's going to be up on my game?
Right. See, they need more people like you. You need to be on the Big Baller Brands team, man, because I like your thinking already.
Well,
if you don't want to play no game, who will? Oh, man, that's going to be a new shirt.
That's right. You write it down, and I'll give you all the rights to it. I'm a lawyer. I can take care of it. We can do a commercials, documentary. The Big Baller Media, that's where it's at.
Whoa, I like your style. Like, I'm telling you, man. See how stuff lined up for me? I wouldn't even meet this guy if I'm not on the phone with you, man.
That's right. You know, you need to plan out success. It doesn't just happen. And when people say that it just happens, then they really don't know how to make it happen. Speak it into existence.
Man, me and you on a motivational speech, man, I don't know how we'd lose.
We wouldn't. And, you know, I'm right behind you with Lonzo. I think that he understands you. What people don't understand is that your sons really get you, and they're into the program. What's happening is there's so many media people who are saying that they're not buying into it because that's probably because of their own insecurities with their kids and how they've raised them. Those are the people who have drug addicts for sons and people who are doing nothing.
Wow. And they spend all this money to go see a psychologist, and all they got to do is call you.
That's it. That's all they got to do. You know, people waste their money, and I know you haven't because...
Waste their money.
Look at how
I got to go sit on the couch and pay thousands of dollars to get this out of them. I'm going to tell them, you know what? When they think I'm crazy back in the day, I'm going to tell them to rewind the conversation me and you had on this radio show.
Absolutely. Then people will understand. People are just not strong enough to move forward, to stay in their lane and keep moving. They think they have to find ways, find excuses. You can't just find excuses. Your boys never, they're not making excuses. They're not saying, oh, my dad is overbearing. He's a helicopter parent. They're not saying any of that. They're just going forward and doing it.
Right, right.
And you know what? Once you've trained them that way, that's how their mind works. That's how your mind works. And I know Tina is devoted to you. You're devoted to her. That's what's important about family. That's family.
Yes.
And that's what the Big Baller Brand is all about.
Man, that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, Nike.
Hey, man, this is one of the, hey, I'm going to tell you this. I don't even know you, but this is one of the best conversations I had with somebody who's as intelligent as you are. And you get it, man. I don't mind talking to people all day like you. It's just the knuckleheads that think they know something else that I have a problem with.
I got to tell you something. You know, my dad, may he rest in peace, said to me, the problem with stupid people is that they don't know they're stupid.
Man, I love it. I love it.
Well, you know, LeVar, I know I have to let you go because
you
got so many commitments. But I got to tell you, we want to have you back on because what you're talking about, you're motivating people. And people who are the naysayers, people who say, you know what, we need an excuse. They're just wimping out. They need to be with your program, the Big Baller program, the Big Baller Brand, the media, everything to take positive and make it happen. And that's what's going to happen with Lonzo, LaMelo, and L'Angelo as we move forward. So I want to wish you all the luck. By the way, where are you going to be for draft night?
I'm going to be draft night?
Yeah.
I'm going to be in New York with my family.
New York. Okay. Because I thought if you were going to be in town here in L.A., I'd stop by and have a beer with you.
I don't drink beer, but I'd be lovely to get some milk whenever we meet up. I like milk and cookies.
That's what
chocolate chip to be preferred.
Chocolate chip.
But that's good.
I like chocolate chunk.
I got a few other things I got to take care of now, man. But I'm going to tell you this. I've had a great time talking to you, and it was really great.
I want to wish you the best Father's Day to the Father of the Year. Thanks for being on Gervie's Law.
Well, Gervie, you have the best Father's Day too, man. And blessings to all you and your family.
Thank you. And all to you and yours. Thanks for being with us.
Lot,
take it
all
easy.
Right. Take care.
All right. Well, there you have it. LeVar Ball, right here on Gervie's Law. We're going to be back with Brett Haley after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Someone you know been injured on the job. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
You're unique, so why is your mattress one size fits all? Because a custom mattress costs thousands, until now. Hi, I'm Christian von Rickenbach, founder of HelixSleep.com, where you can buy a mattress online, customized for you, for hundreds of dollars instead of thousands. Go to HelixSleep.com, answer a few simple questions, and we build you the most comfortable mattress you'll ever sleep on. Shipping is free, and you have 100 nights to try it out. Go to HelixSleep.com/talkradio and get $50 off your order. HelixSleep.com/talkradio.
Wouldn't it be great if you could stop crime before it happens? With the Ring Floodlight Cam, you can. I'm Jamie Siminoff, inventor and founder of Ring. Floodlight Cam is a motion-activated HD security camera that connects right to your phone, so you're alerted when anyone steps onto your property. You can now see, speak, or even sound an alarm right from your phone, anywhere, anytime. Does your floodlight prevent crime? Ours does. Check out our Ring of Security kits at ring.com/secure. That's ring.com/secure.
Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes. The old spaghetti western. I need to bring myself down a notch. This will help me do it. Boy, was that ever something, that interview with LeVar Ball, Father of the Year. Yeah, I'm sweating here, but I guess LeVar Ball really likes me, and, you know, maybe we will hang out. He invited me to be on his team, the Big Baller team. So we'll see how far that goes. We're going to change things up now on Gervey's Law. Yeah, we are departing from our legal theme for this weekend only for Father's Day. And by the way, in that first segment, when I was speaking to LeVar Ball, I did mention my father. And he passed away 12 years ago, actually this week. And he was a wonderful father, and he trained me very well, as LeVar believes he is doing for his kids. And hopefully I can do for my two children, Hudson and Harper. So I hope they appreciate me on Father's Day, as I have always appreciated my father, who, again, unfortunately is no longer with us. We are going to change it up. We're going to talk about the movies. I saw an incredible movie this past weekend. I'm not sure if you've seen it yet or not, but if you haven't, go out and check it out. If you like smartly made movies that are honest and authentic and have meaning, then you should see The Hero. And The Hero is a story about an aging Western actor played by Sam Elliott. It's Lee Hayden in the movie, one-time cowboy movie star, who faces a lot of afflictions, mostly of age, loneliness, the fading career, dwindling sexual magnetism, and a fear that his relationship with his daughter is unsalvageable. As we talk about Father's Day, and we talked about the good relations that LeVar Ball talks about with his three sons, now we're going to talk a little bit about not-so-good father and a not-so-good father-daughter relationship on this Father's Day weekend. And we are privileged to have on Gervey's Law the director and the co-writer of The Hero, Brett Haley. Brett, welcome to Gervey's Law.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
It's great to have you. And as I said, I really enjoyed the movie. Congratulations on that. You know, these days we don't often see filmmakers putting a heart and soul in a film. And even if you're not a 72-year-old aging Western movie star, you can still identify with Sam Elliott's character, Lee Hayden, in the movie. Tell us how you, as kind of a young guy, would have such insight into issues that probably come up later for a lot of us in life.
Well, I get that question a lot. My last film was about a 70-year-old widow played by Blythe Danner in a film called I'll See You in My Dreams. And a lot of people have that question for me. I made that film when I was about 31. I'm 33 now, and Sam Elliott was really the impetus for this project. He was really the inspiration for it, and I wanted to give Sam essentially a performance platform and give him an opportunity to sink his teeth into some really emotional, but also funny and human and honest material, and get him away from sort of what he's known for. I think he is known for great films like The Big Lebowski and Roadhouse and Tombstone. But I think Sam is one of the most incredible actors I've had the pleasure of working with, and I got to know him. And I think I start every film with my co-writer, Mark Bash, with theme. And the themes of the hero, to me, are really organic and really universal.
Right.
They're about mortality, facing one's mortality, looking back on one's life. And I don't think you have to be 72 to start thinking about those things. As you spoke about your father, we all know in this world it's a precious gift and it can be taken away at any time. So I think as a young person, I still think about these issues in a big way. And I wanted to tell a story about a man seeking redemption, not only for his career, but in the end, really, for his loved ones. And that the journey that he really takes is one of coming to terms with the fact that the only legacy that matters in this life is the legacy of the loved ones around you and the relationships that you make along this crazy journey of life.
So, Brett, that's just going to say, that's a very interesting concept. And when we think about it more deeply, and you talk about this kind of love letter that you've written to Sam Elliott in this movie, it begs the question as to why you have Sam's character having these relationship problems. First of all, with his, he's divorced. He has Catherine Rossi, which is his real life wife. And in the movie, his ex-wife. And then with his daughter, who they have an estranged relationship. Yet, for all intents and purposes, in Sam Elliott's real life, he's got a daughter who has a great relationship with, a wife who he's got a wonderful relationship with. So there's a little bit of a juxtaposition here that you're kind of pushing forward. And how does Sam Elliott look at it, and how do you look at it as the reality of his true inner being?
Well, you know, Sam is an actor, first and foremost.
Yes, we know that. Hopefully it wasn't his life.
So we didn't want to create, we didn't want to make a film about Sam Elliott, the man. We created Lee Hayden, who is a flawed human being, someone who I think is really in search of the answers now that he is kind of facing the end of his life. And, you know, if I would have made a film about Sam Elliott, it'd be a pretty boring movie. Because he's got his life together. His career has always been wonderful. He's never not been working. He's not known for just one movie like Lee Hayden is. So we kind of took the things that I think we all love about Sam, his voice, his mustache, his singularity as an actor, his presence as a Western actor, Western icon, if you will.
Right.
I think we took those elements and we put them into a much more flawed human being, because I think audiences want to see someone change over the course of 90 minutes in a film. They want to see someone figure it out. And I think that is the joy of watching Sam play this character, who is a total fictional character separate from Sam, even though there are some close things to him. And as a fan of Sam, I wanted to give him something really dramatic and funny and romantic and emotional and sensitive to really just kind of go for it. And he really bears his soul on the screen, and I think it's quite a special performance that I'm really proud of.
It is a special performance, and one of the things that makes it special is the simplicity for which he's able to play the Lee Hayden character. He doesn't seem forced at all, and it almost seems that he's comfortable in his own skin, even though, as you say, it's diametrically opposed to who he is in real life. When we talk about a parent-child relationship, and of course, this weekend is Father's Day, and we're talking about the laws of fatherhood, how do you approach these kind of depressing relationships? Because in the movie, Kristen Ritter, who plays Lucy, Sam Elliott's daughter in the film, they really have a difficult relationship, and it looks like Sam Elliott is really screwing it up. Do you have any insight into some of these issues of estrangement and how it occurs, and how were you able to write with Mark Bash this kind of really poignant depiction of a father-daughter relationship in trouble?
Well, I don't think, you know, I have great parents, and this is not, again, anything that's sort of close to my life. But I think in some ways, as a filmmaker and a married man, I don't have kids yet, but I might one day. I might be a father one day.
Right.
I look at what my job entails as a director. I'm oftentimes away from home, away from my family. To do this job, you have to be in some ways very selfish because it's an all-encompassing occupation. And I think Lee Hayden, for better or worse, gave his all to his career in a kind of a selfish way. And he's looking at the collateral damage that the chase of these dreams has caused, one of them being an estrangement with his daughter. I don't think that they have the most depressing relationship. I'm sure there are other fathers and daughters or parents out there who have worse relationships than Lee and Lucy do. But the issue of abandonment or of just not being around, just not being present, I think that the best thing we can do as parents is just be there for our kids. It's just be around and listen and be loving. And a lot of times life can get in the way of that.
Right.
We can let our own lives and our own selfishness get in the way. And I think Lee realizes that's the way he's lived his life until this moment. But what's nice about the film is that he's trying. He is trying to right the wrongs in his life. And I think that that's a beautiful message for anybody out there listening. None of us are perfect. We all make mistakes. And there's always going to be regrets in life. And I think the point of the film is that it's never too late to try and fix the things that maybe you screwed up along the way.
Brett, I think you're right there. But, you know, what's interesting, especially in the movie, is that what you see in the Sam Elliott role is someone who really does have a heart and cares and wants to be with his daughter. But sometimes you may not have the tools. I mean, one of the poignant scenes is, and I'm not going to give it away, but when Lucy is going to meet her father for dinner, and you know what happens there just shows the flaws of a human being, even though, like you say, the picture is painted of a real caring and a father who really wants to be with his daughter but may not have the tools to make it happen. You know, when we look at, and one of the most compelling parts of the movie is his relationship with Charlotte, who's played by Laura Prepon very well, by the way. Orange is the New Black, and she does an amazing job, sexual energy. But isn't it the case that sometimes parental relationships with kids just don't seem to take precedence over one's maybe sexual needs or selfish needs as a parent lives his life and is subject to all of the flaws and foibles of anyone who may not be perfect?
I definitely think that's the case, you know, in a lot of situations. I think it can be anything. You know, it can be a job. A lot of times it's a job. A lot of times it's maybe divorce is involved and there are other relationships involved. In The Hero, I don't think it's a direct correlation. The relationship that Lee finds himself in with Charlotte, which is a very unique and weird and interesting one that puts him in a very uncomfortable situation, frankly. He isn't someone who's super excited to jump into this new kind of unknown, mysterious situation. So I don't think the two are directly related in the film, but I think you do bring up a good point that in general, our selfish tendencies can get in the way of being a good parent in general. And I think that Lee is trying and he does screw up again. And you're absolutely right in saying that he has a moment in the film in which he can write things and he screws it up one more time. But that is part of, I think we repeat ourselves, we repeat our mistakes.
Yeah.
And he's simply saying to Lucy, can you just give me one more chapter? Can you just give me one more chance here to try to make it right?
Yeah, you know.
And I think that as human beings, we're all worthy of another chance. And I think that Lee is as well. And it's funny because the audience, I think, finds themselves rooting for Lee, even though he's a flawed guy.
Sure, they do. And I think, you know, the other thing that when you say this, it makes you reflect on your own life because you can actually watch him screwing up in certain situations. And maybe you reflect on how we in our own lives screw up when we probably should act in a certain way and we don't. Sometimes you have to see it in someone else on the big screen for it to have an impact. And especially, you know, we're talking about Father's Day weekend. And as a parent, I think you're right. You have to be able to really be vigilant and think and be internalize things so that you're able to be more self-aware. One of the things that's interesting in the film is you have a number of scenes where mostly Sam and some, and in one scene, Lucy, they're at the beach and you see the waves crashing against the shore. And there, it's like a metaphor, I guess, when we talk about being a speck of sand, perhaps, and the reflectiveness of looking out at the water and realizing we're not bigger than the sea and we're not bigger than the sand. Is that the intent of those scenes, or am I just trying to get really esoteric?
I think you're pretty right on, Alan. I mean, I think that the ocean and the waves represent a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And that's sort of the beauty of film, is that these visual representations can be interpreted in many different ways. You know, and I don't think that your interpretation in any way is off. In fact, it's pretty right on. The idea of the ocean being a constant, being more powerful than we are, being cyclical and being here long after we're gone, is all a part of the metaphor, I think, that's playing out behind them. And Lee, you know, in the film has these, you know, dream sequences. And, you know, I think that the waves are used in those dream sequences as well. And there's this idea that a cowboy, if you will, can only go so far west until he hits the coast.
Right.
And his journey is over. And he's staring at the ocean and looking at the waves crashing before him and realizing that we all must meet our eventual end. And it's the journey, not the destination, that is important.
Yeah.
I try very hard to keep my films positive and hopeful. And I think that Lee's journey to that is a hopeful one. And I think that it would be a great reminder to people on Father's Day that we do have to work hard to be good to the loved ones in our life, no matter how flawed we are.
Now, clearly, after that dissertation, you can be considered a very soulful filmmaker. And I know you have said in the past that as an independent filmmaker, you need to make films that speak to you, that you're not just doing a formula as we see often. When you are looking to make these films, are you being as philosophical as you undoubtedly are as a person? Or do you think about marketing, and do you think about big business and everything else that non-independent filmmakers really focus on?
I don't personally know. I mean, I think that I make films that have an entertainment quality at the heart of them. And I think that I don't like to make films that are not entertaining. I think that the hero is a journey. It's an emotional one, but it's not without its laughs. It's not without levity. It's not without humanity and relatability. And I think it's a really enjoyable and fun time, even though it's emotional at the end of the day. And I think people can get a wonderful 90-minute escape from this film in the same way that they could get an escape from Wonder Woman. You know, Wonder Woman just has action sequences, while we have emotional sequences or human sequences or dialogue sequences. They're just a different way of getting to the entertainment, getting to that moment of feeling something. Even the biggest movies, they don't work unless you feel something or care for the characters. But I think it's a dangerous thing to start off any project with the idea that I need to please the box office concerns, or please critics, or please this type of audience, or play to this. You have to do as an artist what is inside of you from the beginning. And if you start making a film with this is going to do X, Y, or Z, you're going to be wrong. And your intentions, I think, are misguided. I think it's really important to shoot from the heart and the gut when you're writing and when you're making art in any way. And I consider my films to be an art form, a place in which I'm really kind of working things out in my own life or various things. I sometimes call filmmaking like my version of therapy. It's a way that I can work things out on screen and hopefully share those concerns and those issues and those themes with with audiences that I think relate to the film and really connect with the film. Yeah. And that's what I've been seeing. I've been playing this film across the country. We opened in New York and LA last weekend, and we had a wonderful opening weekend. And what I've seen over and over again is that people are just incredibly moved by the film. And I have to think that's because they're connecting to it on a human and emotional level. That's a residual effect and a thing that I'm very happy of. But there's no way to plan that in advance.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about therapy. In our first segment, of course, we had LeVar Ball on, and he was saying, you know, to heck with therapy. You don't need to pay money to go to a therapist. Just have a good attitude and a positive attitude. I think when you go and see the hero, it is a little bit of therapy. And, of course, you're not paying as much as you would to see a therapist. But if people are self-reflective, they will understand exactly what you're saying. And it helps that you have this kind of energy in the film that really works. And one of the things that I thought was great was the way Laura Prepon played the role of Charlotte, a much younger woman as a love interest for Sam Elliott's character, Lee Hayden. And not a lot of actresses could pull that off because it does look a little weird. I mean, I think the first time they kind of look at each other and their eyes meet, it's a little uncomfortable for the audience. But then as the film progresses, you really feel that sexual energy, and Laura Prepon, I thought, was perfect for that.
Yeah, Laura, I mean, look, that's a very difficult relationship to pull off, and it's something that I was trying to do. The last film that I made, I'll See You in My Dreams, had an age-appropriate relationship in it, Sam and Blythe Danner, and it's something that I felt like I wanted to do, and I pulled it off. This was something that I wanted to challenge myself, and in many ways, I think the relationship goes beyond just a sexual connection. And in fact, by the end of the film, that's not really why they're still together. There's something much, much deeper at play. And the wonderful thing that Laura brings to this role is a sense of mystery. You're not really sure what her intentions are.
Yes, you're not.
When she first meets him. And I think that it keeps the audience on their toes. I also think it asks the question and pushes the buttons of people to say, why are we so judgmental of relationships of any kind that are not similar? That are not two people of similar age or race or creed or sexuality or gender. Why do we judge those harsher than, say, two people that just seemingly look right together,
right,
quote
that,
unquote?
Yeah.
And I think that it brings up, I had a woman come up to me after a screening in Austin. She was a 45-year-old cancer survivor who was married to a 75-year-old man. They had been married for 10 years.
Yeah.
And she said, thank you for putting this on screen, because you can't imagine how often I go out with my husband, whom I love dearly, who was with me during my cancer treatment, and is a wonderful man, and you can't imagine how often we go out and get mistaken for father and daughter, or the eyes, or, oh, she must be a gold digger. We're very judgmental about it, and I think I wanted to put forth a relationship that you don't normally see. Now, granted, it's a cliche and a trope in Hollywood. It is abused by Hollywood, where you take a beautiful young woman and an older man, and you put them together romantically just because, and there's no reason for it.
You know,
but if people go and see the film, they'll see that Lee is the one who is weirded out by all of this. He is the one asking the questions, and it's Laura's character who's really pushing the relationship and pushing her agenda, and in many ways holding the strings in that relationship. But I think people will be very surprised by where this relationship goes.
Yeah.
And I think in the end, it's a very truly emotional, sensitive connection that those two characters have. And I think without Laura's performance, we wouldn't have been able to pull it off.
No, I agree with that. And especially when you talk about the juxtaposition of her doing her comedy act versus the moment she's alone with Lee Hayden, Sam Elliott's character, you can really see who she really is and the real Charlotte, not just who's on stage. And that's another metaphor. We call it mauvaise foi, when we put bad faith on when we're with people in public versus who we are when we strip ourselves of all these masks and all of this bad faith, and we're really showing who we are, peeling the onion, so to speak, so you see on what level people can truly communicate, and age really doesn't matter when we talk about that. The movie is called The Hero. Brett Haley is the director and co-writer. It's really worth seeing. Brett, I want to thank you for being with us on this Father's Day weekend and sharing a lot of really great insight. It's a great movie, and people should run out and see it.
I appreciate it, Alan. I hope people do run out and see it and enjoy Father's Day. And a happy Father's Day to you as well.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Brett. Thanks for being with us. And you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yo, everybody get up. Everybody get up. Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost the sheep, and she don't know where to find them.
Go!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Think about everything you've done to make sure your small business is truly professional. Well, Vistaprint is here to help your business look professional from the very first impression with 500 high-quality business cards starting at $9.99. That's 500 cards for less than 10 bucks. Whether you want your business to feel trustworthy with our hand-selected paper stocks or to stand out with brilliant finishes, you'll get the card that fits your business at Vistaprint.com. Just use promo code 6688 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 6688.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
You can buy online and pick up in-store at Macy's for free. Find the perfect Father's Day gift, even with no time to shop. Just order at Macy's.com by 3 p.m. today and pick it up in-store the same day. Plus, you'll get a savings pass for an extra 20 or 15% off your next in-store purchase at Macy's. Shop today during our incredible Macy's One-Day Sale for select lowest prices of the season. Buy online and pick up in-store at Macy's for free. Savings off sale prices, exclusions apply.
My name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton. We've been married 38 years. We're retired, and this is how we live united.
We play golf and we travel, but we also decided we were going to give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
I do the nursing at the clinic.
I work the front office, checking in patients, greeting them, making them feel comfortable.
United Way is how we contribute, because we know our time and money are going to the right places, the places that need it most and implement it best.
Judging by the thank yous we get at the clinic, I'd say we're doing the right thing with our retirement, too.
We even get a few bless yous. It's incredible.
We're Tom and Cindy Thornton. We volunteer at our community free health clinic, so we don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live united. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, you are listening to Gervey's Law. Wow, what a show we've had today. We started with LeVar Ball. Then we went to Brett Haley, who is the director and writer of The Hero. And, of course, LeVar Ball is the father of Lonzo Ball, who will be drafted probably number 2 by the Lakers this year. And June 22nd, coming right up. We're talking about fathers. This is Father's Day weekend, and we hope you're all having a great weekend. There's an interesting book that is coming out in September of 2017, this year. And I'm really excited about it because it's a very deep and probing look at memory and inheritance of pain and how we deal with the future and the past. It's called Survivor Cafe, The Legacy of Trauma and the Labyrinth of Memory. And before we close the show, because we're talking about Father's Day, we're talking about the influence that parents have had in our lives. We're talking to Elizabeth Rosner, who is the writer of Survivor Cafe. Elizabeth, welcome to Gervey's Law.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, it's really nice to have you. This is a very interesting subject matter, and I know it's something that probably has been something you've lived with your whole life. Tell us about your relationship with your father and your mother and how it came that you were going to do this book.
Well, both of my parents survived the Holocaust, and they were teenagers at the time of the war, and they met as refugees after the war ended, came to America, where my sister and I and my brother were born. And so I grew up in the United States, but I was very, very connected to the history of my parents and what had happened to them during World War II. And I always had this sense, like many people in my generation, that what happened to my parents impacted me so fully that in some ways I was carrying their stories and their memories more vividly than some of my own experiences. So as a writer, I worked on novels and poetry. I published other books that fictionalized the subject. But a couple of years ago, I went to Germany with my father for the third time, and we visited the concentration camp where he had been a prisoner. And I began to see how many of the survivors were already gone. They had already passed away, and that eventually a time would come when the people who lived through those experiences were no longer here to bear witness, and that my generation and subsequent generations were now going to take the responsibility of carrying those stories.
Right.
Led me into an even broader question about what are other families carrying, what other intergenerational inheritances can I look at and begin to understand what we all carry,
so
from
in
parents, grandparents, and farther back.
In a sense, we can't just forget about history. It's interesting, as I'm listening to you, I was thinking specifically about my situation, and I have two kids, 3 and 4 years old, and I've often thought they would never know what we used to call a greener accent, or a greena in Yiddish accent, from survivors, Europeans who came to this country and to Canada, were fortunate enough to get here. And it's really sad that the history cannot be relived. But at the same time, when you talk about the pain that people carry forward, it becomes really a difficult issue that will be alive in future generations.
Well, and I want to emphasize, too, that it's not only about pain. It's also realizing how much resilience we carry, how much love of life we carry. You know, we inherit a spectrum of emotions and a spectrum of experiences. And it's also the case that what subsequent generations miss out on hearing isn't just the sound of those voices, but the particular twinkle in somebody's eye, or, you know, the way they smell, or what the touch of their hand is like. And
right.
So it's actually very physical too. And no matter how many videos we can see or audio testimonies we hear, there's something deeply embodied about this memory that researchers are starting to understand literally gets transmitted in a way through the DNA.
And it's interesting.
And so go ahead.
Well, I was going to say Survivor Cafe is a perfect title, because what you're talking about is survival, and that's really what the legacy is of a lot of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the book is just sounds like it's fascinating, and I think it's something that's really important. As we have to close, unfortunately, tell us what your father has meant to you over your lifetime.
Well, I'm so grateful that my father, age 88, is still going strong, and he's a model of perseverance and optimism. Given all of the terrible things he lived through as a young person, he has never lost his sense of hope and belief that the future is going to get better. And he passed that on to my siblings and me in great measure, and he continues to demonstrate that You know, you get up every day and you keep doing the things you believe are worth doing, and you try to make a difference. You try to make the world a better place.
That is a great message to send out this Father's Day. Elizabeth Rosner, the book is called Survivor Cafe, The Legacy of Trauma and the Labyrinth of Memory. We are looking forward to September 12th, 2017 when it comes out. Thanks.